All right, Jacqueline Matter. Jacqueline Matter from Fox 5. I can already tell this episode is going to be so good. Okay, you're one of the newest members of Fox 5, all right? Anchor, reporter. You a lot of people see you on the weekends. But how long have you been at Fox 5?
Yeah, so I'm coming up on, I think, about 8 months now that I've been here. Started out freelancing. Now I'm full-time anchoring on the weekends, and then 3 days a week I'm either reporting or filling in. So really kind of a mixed bag of different roles, which is really kind of fun if you think about it, because I get to do the storytelling aspect and get out there and boots on the ground type situation. And then I get to be in the studio, our beautiful studio here, and get to anchor on the weekends as well, which is great.
We do have a gorgeous studio. Makes coming to work pretty easy, you know?
I know. I was blown away when I walked in here. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is what people dream of when you start in the news business. People are like, you end up in some basement somewhere in your market. And then you're like, oh yes, I made it into this beautiful studio.
Well, you're lucky because we used to have a basement.
I was there for 1 week. Oh, only you were? 1 week. So I saw the basement.
You were like, I'm glad I'm coming on up out of this. All right. Well, you have a really fascinating story, and we're going to talk about, you're very beautiful, and over the years, that's a good thing. And then also sometimes it's a bad thing because people don't realize there's so much more to you under the surface. But take us back. You grew up in a military family. You've lived in many cities, including Alexandria, Virginia, for a brief period of time. So tell me about your parents. Tell us about where you were born, kind of how it started.
Yeah, so I was born in Seattle, Washington. I have never been back, so I couldn't tell you anything about Seattle. Never been there since then. Probably should do that. Put it on the bucket list. And then I really moved all across the country, all the way growing up. I mean, I've told this to a lot of people. It's easier for me to tell you where I haven't lived than where I have lived, because I have literally lived all across the country. At some point, we lived in Honduras for a little while. My dad was stationed in Germany as well. So I've lived all across the country. And that would be because of the military. My dad and my stepdad were both in the military. So, we were always on the go. And I think the longest we ever stayed anywhere would be maybe 2 or 3 years at most.
And I'm probably going to get this confused, but was your grandfather Army and your dad Marine, or your grandfather Marine, dad?
Yeah, Army? My grandfather was a Marine and my dad was in the Army. So was my stepdad. And then my great grandfather was in the Navy. So I've got a really long line of military men in my family, and all of them, really, really successful in their careers in the military.
Did they force you to make the bed from the time you were three? Like, I always hear military.
No, but like, I will tell you, I had to get my hunter's safety card before I could get my driver's license when I was in high school. Like, it was like, you need to know how to handle a gun properly. And, I went hunting when I was younger with my stepfather. And I had to get that before I could even get a driver's license, or driver's permit for that matter.
They made you learn gun safety. They made you learn how to shoot when you were really young.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you ever have any interest? God, I remember that. My grandfather was, he was in World War II. My dad never served, but my grandfather was always like, you need to learn how to shoot a gun. And then winter time, they drag us out there to Target. I just wanted to eat a hot dog at the end. They'd give us hot dogs.
I know. I mean, I really had no interest at the time. I was in middle school and I was I just want to be on my cell phone, So
yeah.
They'd be like, if you can hit all these targets, you can have an hour on your cell phone or something like that. And I was done.
And your grandfather is Polish, right?
He is. Yeah. My grandfather's Polish. My grandmother is Finnish. So we have this really rich heritage that my family is very keen on doing all sorts of different family traditions. We've got a few. One of my favorites is the Polish Catholic tradition of breaking bread during Christmas time. And it's really kind of a unique tradition. So basically you go around the room, and we have a big family. So, at Christmas time, this would turn into several hours of us going around the room. You take a piece of unleavened bread from the Catholic Church that hasn't been blessed, and you go around the room and each person breaks off a piece. And when, for instance, if I were to come to you, I would say, here, Sarah, you take a piece. And then I would tell you, what I'm proud of for the past year for you, what I'm hopeful for you in the new year, and, you know, just something sweet about that person. And you go around the room and, you know, over the years, over the different trials and tribulations that people have gone through, it really is a sweet tradition. And we still do it. We don't all gather anymore necessarily, but we still call each other on the phone. You know, my different family members live all across the country now, and we still make time to do that. So that's something that I really love, is a unique family tradition.
Are Polish people the ones that do like the polka dancing?
I don't know. Maybe. We've never done the polka dancing. My grandma eats a lot of pierogies and kielbasa.
Okay, wrong background.
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. Maybe I don't know the background.
No. I think you know. I think your grandfather would have introduced that by now.
Exactly. Maybe we've been missing out on it.
So. No, I love that. That's a Polish tradition. What else? Is there other things growing up that were very important to your grandparents about being Polish that they really wanted to instill in you?
You know, my grandpa, his parents came directly over from Poland. And I never got a chance to meet them. There were, you know, just little things that he would say, some more, and I don't remember them for the life of me. I apologize. You know, my grandma, her father's from Finland. We do have a kind of another side of my grandma's, her mother, my great grandmother, they own, my family on that side owns the largest funeral home service in the South, and the oldest funeral home service.
Like in the South of the United States?
Yeah. So really? It's in Virginia. It's in the state of Virginia. My family, my great-grandmother's family originated in Salem and Roanoke, Virginia. So if you go that direction, or you know anybody from there, drive through there. If you see the name Okie's Funeral Home, there's Okie Park, there's Okie this, that, and the other. So my family started that over 100 years ago they originally started during the Civil War as like, you know, kind of a makeshift funeral home, if you will.
Wow.
And then just kind of grew it over the year. So it's kind of an odd family business, but nonetheless, it's a family business. So something that, you know, is kind of interesting.
So it's amazing because you never got into embalming people or in the military. You seem to have gone the opposite. I mean, that's pretty impressive that the family has kept the funeral business in the family for 100 years.
Yeah, it's still run by my my second cousin, my mom's cousin, and now his son has now taken it over. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, interesting how they're able. There's a whole room with all the history of it. And so it's really kind of a neat, you know.
Yeah. Did your family ever try to encourage you to go into either the funeral business or the military?
Not really, no. I mean, I kind of was interested in funeral home business, but I wasn't, not in the sense that I, you know, wanted to enter into that business for a career. I've always just been really into, you know, crime shows and things of that nature. So I found it kind of fascinating. And, you know, the respect that they have and the dignity they have towards those who have passed is really, really unique and interesting as well, because I think people don't necessarily see that aspect of it all, and the way they, you know, care for the people who have passed and their families is something that they pride themselves on.
Oh, and they should, because unfortunately we've all lost somebody. And, you know, when you deal with the funeral home that are pros, you know, for lack of a better word, but they are, they're really good. I mean, they really help you through the worst moments of your life in this grieving process, and they take care of everything and they really help you honor that person. So that's beautiful that they do that, you know, with such pride. Okay, you were an only child, but your parents got divorced when you were fairly young. Your mom went on and remarried, and so did your father. How many siblings do you have now, kind of in your family?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'm the only child between my parents. So grew up being an only child until I was about second, third grade. And then, you know, I kept bugging my parents, I want a brother, I want a sister. And finally, my mom and my stepdad, I have one sister from them. And then my dad and my stepmom, I have a brother and a sister on that side. So I'm very, very close with my sister on my mom's side. And she and I are like this, you know, best friends. And we're actually 9 to 10 years apart. So we've never really had an argument, a fight, because there's such a different age gap. Like, we're never, you know, the sisters that are like, you stole my shirt or anything like that. So it's been a really good relationship. You know, she is, she's extremely smart. We're very different in a respectful way, in the sense that, you know, she's actually 4'11".
What?
Okay, let me give her the benefit of the doubt. She's going to yell at me if she hears this and I say that she's 4'11". She's maybe 5 foot.
We'll say 5 foot, because people ask that about you all the time. I mean, when I look at the comments online, everyone wants to know how tall Jacqueline Matter is. And you are a very tall woman, right?
Yeah, I'm 5'10" without heels. With heels, you know, I can 6'2" sometimes if I got a 4-inch pair of heels on. So, you know, sometimes I'm like, well, I look like a giraffe walking around the newsroom in a pair of high heels, but it is what it is, you know.
Oh, own it, you know. And I mean, yeah, you must be giving Sierra Fox a run for her money. Sierra Fox is very tall as well.
Oh, I know. She and I joke all the time. We're like, look, we can just become like the Victoria's Secret Angels of Fox 5 or something. Because we're both, you know, to be a Victoria's Secret model, you have to be like 5'9", I think, at least.
Oh my God. I love that. Yeah, I feel like if everybody at our station would love that, honestly. Anyway, let's talk about your childhood. Like a lot of us, you had a tumultuous childhood at times. So, you know, your parents get divorced when you're very young. Your mom goes on and remarries. So for a while, it sounds like, you know, your parents' relationship, your stepfather and mom, was good. They have your sister, you know, all is going along. But at what point, because we'll talk about this, you're an advocate for PTSD. What point did things change and your stepfather really, his PTSD really became prominent?
Yeah. So that is, you know, something that is not a lot of people know about me. It's not something that I go around speaking about frequently until like recently I have been more verbal about it. So probably my sophomore, junior year of high school, my stepdad had been deployed multiple times to Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, post 9/11, you know, serving in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And, you know, he had served, I think we had seen him 100 days in 6 years almost.
That's over the span.
Yeah, over the span of time. So wow. That speaks volumes to the amount of time he was spending overseas. And so we didn't really see him very frequently. And then when he did come back from Iraq, you know, he had seen a lot, you know, just as any military service men or women have seen when they've been overseas serving, you know, and it was pretty bad. He came back, he would wake up with nightmares. You know, he himself would be screaming and yelling. At one point, we had tarps over all of our windows. We had AK-47s by the door. You know, my dad was a big hunter and, of course, involved in the military. So, you know, he grew up being a hunter, so he knew guns really well. And, you know, he always thought that the enemy was out to get us. And so, you know, this became really concerning, as you can imagine, for my mom. And, you know, my sister and I, we didn't really, I don't think at the time, noticed it probably as much. Now looking back, I'm like, okay, yeah, I kind of remember that. Or, you know, right, little things that I'm like, I didn't think anything of that until now.
Because Jacqueline, give us some perspective. How old would you and your sister have been when things like the tarps over the wall, over the window started happening?
Yeah, so I would have been probably 16. 15, 16, going on to 17. And my sister, she would have been second grade, maybe third grade.
So she's like seven. Very young. Okay.
8 years old, very, very young. And yeah, so that's what we dealt with for a really long time. And it wasn't until things got really bad, you know, to the point that our lives were threatened, that my mom had to pick us up, my sister and I, and we left. We left when we lived in Colorado. We left Colorado, and after that, you know, we kind of lost contact with my stepdad because my mom was like, "I've got to leave and protect my girls." And so,
yeah,
up and moved my senior year of high school. You know, in my mind, I was like, "What are we doing? This is the end of the world for me." In my mom's mind, she's trying to save our lives.
So, Jacqueline, when prior to this, and I mean, you didn't see him a lot for 6 years. I mean, when he came back, was there any help available for him? I mean, did you guys, I feel like really only in the past 10 years, people have started talking about PTSD and how severe it is for so many men and women who serve, right? But, yeah. But you guys were kind of at that tipping point when it still wasn't super talked about. So was he getting any therapy at this point? Or like you guys were just coming home trying to deal with this person who was clearly not well?
You're exactly right, Sarah. I mean, this was not a topic of conversation 10 years ago. This was if you tell his, you know, commanding officer that this is something he's dealing with, he's going to get demoted or kicked out of the military. And then there goes his entire career. And that's where we were, you know, that was the situation my mom was in. Like, do I ruin, you know, this man that I love's life by doing that, or do I leave? Because, you know, it was a really threatening situation. And so, you know, there was no help. There was no, where do I go from here? Where can my mom reach out to somebody? How can we get him help? That wasn't a thing. And you're exactly right. I mean, it wasn't until recently that, you know, I believe I've covered a few stories about lawmakers who are making efforts to try and make it so you can't be dishonorably or honorably discharged for having PTSD, which is a thing. You know, you can be discharged for having PTSD.
Crazy after they give so much.
Exactly. So, you know, here you are putting these people in these situations overseas to fight for our country. They come back with some sort of mental illness, and rightfully so, given what they've seen. And now there's no help for them. So, you know, that was a really big concern. And, you know, again, at the time, what are you supposed to do? But here we are 10 years later, and that would have been a tremendous help if that would have been there.
So what was it like? I mean, did you have anxiety at the time? Obviously, your sister was probably very young, so she didn't really know. Your mom obviously took the brunt of this. She knew how dangerous the situation could have been. But was it later in life that you were like, oh my God, you know, this could have been really bad? Or at that time, did you have severe anxiety? Like you really were like afraid of him?
Yeah, no, at the time, I didn't know why we were leaving. I didn't see anything wrong. I was not, a lot of the things that were happening were behind the scenes, or, you know, between closed doors with my mom and my stepdad, and not things that we were necessarily seeing. And if we did, they were, you know, kind of minor. It wasn't until probably several years later that I realized just like how bad it was in the situation that my mom was put in, and the situation that we were in, that I realized like, okay, that was traumatic to say the least. Like at the time I thought it was normal. I didn't think anything of it. But, you know, looking back, I'm like, it took me a really long time to even talk about it, to even address what had happened to us. I mean, I would break down in tears, just even the thought of, you know, talking about what we went through. And, you know, it took me competing again in beauty pageants to speak about what happened to us and to be able to share that story with people, that made it easier for me to talk about it, which was kind of therapeutic in a way.
Wow. So with both of your dads, okay, with your stepfather to this day, have you had any contact with him?
I have not, no. And I haven't spoken to him since my junior year of high school.
So you were getting involved with pageants even before his PTSD, right? But as you mentioned, then you get into the beauty pageant world. So what brought you into that world? It sounds like it was a couple different things.
Yeah. So I originally started doing beauty pageants when I was in middle school, and it was more so an effort to curb my shyness. I was very, very shy and very timid when I was in middle school. I got made fun of a lot. I was, you know, kind of bullied and just wouldn't look at people in the eye when I would have a conversation with them. I would kind of whisper when I was talking, you know, just was very timid. And so my mom put me in beauty pageants at the time in an effort to fix that, I guess you could say. And it worked. Here I am, a news anchor, and now I just talk for a living. So in retrospect, great job, Mom. That worked out. But, you know, I stopped doing them after high school, went to college. You know, I was like, okay, I'm kind of over it. It was fun. It was kind of like a competition. But then once I graduated college, I got back into beauty pageants because I was competing. I was working in news now at this point, and decided to compete in Miss North Carolina International, which is a pageant system that is based off of, your platform. A lot of the 50% of the score is based off of what, you know, effort or what passion you have and how you're going to use that and speak about whatever that is that your platform is for a year as your title, if you were Miss North Carolina or then Mrs. International. So I figured that was a really good outlet for me. At this point, I was like, I'm still really upset about what happened to me years ago. And, you know, I thought this might be a good effort to share my story and how what happened to me and the tragedies I dealt with may be helpful to somebody else. Somebody looks at me and sees me on TV and thinks, oh, you know, this girl's got it made. Everything's great. But in reality, like, that's not the case. I went through a lot when I was younger, and I hope that by sharing my story that I could help others. And so that's why I got back into pageants and competed in Miss North Carolina and, you know,
and won. Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, that's ultimately that what helped me win that title of Miss North Carolina. And I spoke for a year traveling the state of North Carolina while I was also a reporter in my first market, talking about PTSD awareness and really trying to actually, I almost tried to start my nonprofit, but you know, there's a lot of effort. And then being in TV, it's hard to, you know, since you're constantly picking up and moving, I tried to start my own nonprofit that was focused on military families and helping them with PTSD trauma. Here we are in today's day and age, you know, a few years back when I was in my first market, where PTSD awareness is being spoken about. It's being talked about more and more, but the families are the ones that are missing out on some of the help that they need, because you can get the veteran or the active duty service member all the help in the world at this point, but it also affects their family members. As I've mentioned, you know, that was really important for me to try to find. And there's still really not a whole lot of help out there for people who's, you know, who are dealing PTSD and their families.
So, and take me back, because the bullying is interesting. I think a lot of us have been bullied for different reasons. I mean, I was short and fat and was always, you know, getting like seconds. It was fine. I was always at the school cafeteria getting like seconds, you know. So you know, people had a few things to say. Now, what were you picked on about?
Yeah, so I know a lot of people are really surprised by this, but I was like totally a late bloomer. I was weird looking. I was weird, to be honest. I was just a strange child. Ask my mom. I just was very fair skinned. I have blonde, you know, eyelashes. People would like, some of them would call me like a lemur because I looked like, you know, with big eyes. Like,
kids are the worst.
Kids. The middle school, like, that's the end of the world. But looking back, I'm like, what kind of insult is that?
You're a lemur.
You know, and I was just bullied a lot. I had braces. I was more developed than everybody. I think at one point I had braces, glasses, and headgear at one point. That was great.
Oh my God, you poor thing. That was a whole thing. So when do you, okay, well, probably pageants, right? It sort of helped you kind of come into your own and be comfortable in your own skin.
Exactly. It really did. I mean, it was the thing that I think put me into that tough transition. But because of that, like, I had to figure it out. You know, here I am. I mean, and there were plenty of times where I totally bombed a pageant. You know, I would like clam up on, you know, cry in the interview or who knows what. There's all sorts of tragic stories with that. But, you know, I had to put myself in those positions from my mom's perspective. And, you know, I think that's really what helped me, because it made me realize, like, okay, you've got to figure this out. Like, you can't clam up like this every single time somebody tries to talk to you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So on top of all this that you're going through, right? You know, your parents are divorced, you have a relationship with your father. And then tell us the story. Your father was in the Pentagon on 9/11.
Yeah. Well, that's... So 9/11 is probably, as with anyone, you know, we can all remember where we were on 9/11, and many of us have, you know, tragic stories from that day. And I remember exactly where I was. My dad was living here in Virginia, or Alexandria, Virginia. My mom, I was living with my mom at the time, but we were in Arkansas. And, you know, so there was a bit of a time difference. And so I remember here I was, the only military kid in an all Catholic school in Arkansas, where an hour behind. And my dad worked in the Pentagon. He worked actually in the wing where the plane hit. He luckily was moving his office that day to another wing at the Pentagon. And we didn't hear from him for 3 days. I had no clue. My stepmom had no clue whether he was alive or not. And what happened underneath the Pentagon into the, you know, basement or secret spot, I guess you would call it. And, you know, that's where he was planning logistics with other top military officials. But that's why we didn't hear from him for 3 days.
And could not like send an email or a text or anything. You guys had no idea for 3 days if your father was alive.
Yeah. So it was pretty tragic. I mean, we were watching everything on the news. I remember, you know, I'm in third grade, I believe, at this point. And I walked into school and little kids are telling me, oh, your dad's dead. Your dad's dead. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what? And so,
because all they had seen were the images, so they didn't know that people had survived, who was okay. So that's
what that was. And then I got pulled out of class and my principal took me into her office and I'm sitting in her office. And I remember the chair. I remember sitting there. I remember feeling like this tiny little thing in this big blue chair with, wood frame. All of that, I remember the TV in the corner, and all I saw was, you know, the World Trade Center and everything that was happening and unfolding on TV. And I'm like, why am I in here? What is going on? And then my mom came and picked me up from class and, you know, told me what was happening. And she was like, we don't know what's going on. You know, nobody knows what's going on. We can't get a hold of your dad. And so it was very, very traumatic.
Yes. Oh my God. I mean, you've been through so much. You find out he survives 9/11, but you say that 9/11 and that incident really shaped your decision to go into media. How did it do that? Why?
Yeah. So, going back a little bit on the whole 9/11 thing, I will say when I first moved here to DC, my boyfriend and I went around to multiple different, you know, memorials, the World War II Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial, all the different places in DC. And when we went to the 9/11 Memorial, I mean, it took all of me to not just break down into tears, because for me, you know, for other people, the Vietnam Memorial, like they lost somebody, but I almost lost somebody in the 9/11 Memorial. And albeit not as impactful from, you know, the other memorials, it just overcame me. Like the wave of emotions was really tough for me. Yeah. But again, to answer your question about how I kind of got into journalism, I mean, from 9/11 on, the news was always on at my house, whether it was on TV, in the car, it was NPR radio. There was no music played in the car. It was constantly something with an update on what was happening in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan or what was going on. And so, you know, at dinner time, we didn't watch a family movie. We watched the news. That's what we did as a family when we would gather around the table. I mean, we would have the TV in the background and we would be at the dinner table watching the news. And so for me, that's what I became enamored with. And then when my dad was, or my stepdad was deployed, I would always watch the news and see, oh, well, maybe I can see my dad in the background of, you know, these news reports. Obviously, that wasn't going to be the case. But younger me thought, you know, okay, I get a glimpse of him out there. And so I really became infatuated with this this industry and was like, okay, I would love to do that. It wasn't until I was older that I realized that this was actually a profession. You know, when I was in high school, I did my high school newscast. And then when I went to college, I thought, okay, well, maybe if I major in political science, I thought all these people had, you know, law degrees. I was watching Megyn Kelly, you know, people like that, and was like, oh, well, I've got to have a law degree in order to be on TV. Well, that wasn't the case.
Now we'll take anyone. No.
So I actually went to school with the intent to major in political science, and then switched my major after I interned at a law firm one summer in college, and then realized, oh, okay, so journalism is a major. So switched my major, and then it just became, I mean, I was just in love after that with the storytelling, and I just knew that this was what I wanted to do. So a lot of it stems from that beginning moment, though, with 9/11 and watching the news ever since.
I think everybody at this point that is listening, their jaws are like on the floor. Like, I mean, you have been through, holy God. I mean, is your mom a superhero? I don't know how your mother, I mean, sometimes in life you get like one scare, you know, about your partner. I mean, your mother must be one tough woman to endure all that she's done.
Absolutely. My mom, I mean, the things she's gone through, the things she's done herself, I mean, in her own career, you know, it's just astounding to me. I mean, she, my sister and I are always like, and my mom's always like, I'm scared I didn't raise you two right, and all these, you know, different insecurities she has. And I'm like, Mom, you did so much. You were two parents for both of us, you know, and it was a lot. And she, you know, did whatever she could in the best way she knew how in each situation. And I mean, I can never speak enough.
I mean, the fact that she could get out of bed every day and get you guys out of bed is like amazing. I mean, so tell me, so over the years, you know, your relationship with your stepfather, obviously we know, you know, that was strained. And then your dad, you and your dad currently are not speaking, right?
Right. Yeah. So we just kind of had a falling out. You know, there were a few times where, you know, I tried to reach out to him and lived with him for a little while when I was in college. And, you know, there was just a few things that it just, there were some other back history situations that between him and my mom that just were never resolved.
Sure.
Situations that I had seen between them. And, you know, that's okay. I, at the end of the day, I tried my best. I did what I needed to do. And sometimes you just have to learn to let go. And if those people want to come back in your life, then
yes, yes.
I'm open to that idea.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, you can't say I didn't try.
Okay. So we got to talk about your relationship because, okay, now learning all this, are you scared as hell to get married or are you ready to marry your man?
Oh my goodness. For the longest time, I like avoided, like I avoid military men like the plague.
I would say no, it's a pass. Like, I'm sure you could be the best man in the world, but I'm sorry, you're in the Marines.
Been there, done pass. That. Don't want to experience the deployments. No, my boyfriend and I, we've been together going on 5 years now. I absolutely adore him. He's a great guy. He's a lawyer, so don't worry, he's not a military guy.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So we've been together since I lived in Tampa. That's where we met. I had been there about 6 months. We met at a tiki bar, surprisingly. Typical Florida, right?
That's so Tampa. I love it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so he moved here to DC with me and everything's been going great.
So, you know, your journalism career starts in North Carolina. You go to Tampa. You were in Tampa the longest time in that market. For how many years? 5 years, 6 years were you in Tampa?
5 years. Yeah.
And that was a great television market.
Oh my goodness, it's great there. I mean, who wants to leave Tampa? It's beautiful.
Beautiful. The weather's great. So how did your journalism career go in Tampa? What did you learn there? I mean, I guess they probably really taught you the beginning of how to be a great journalist.
Yeah. So originally, you know, I started in North Carolina, was a bureau reporter for a year, and then moved to the morning anchor position there in North Carolina. And then I had a great opportunity in Tampa to be the morning anchor there, and started out there on a morning show. And it was great. I mean, I loved it. That's really kind of my natural personality, is to be this like outgoing, bubbly person. And so it was kind of hard for me when I transitioned to evening news, because I'm like, okay, we're not supposed to smile as much. Got it. But I did the morning show there for about a year. Then I moved to the evening show. And so I was anchoring 4, 5, 6, and 11 p.m. And then right before the pandemic, March of 2020, I started hosting my own political talk show. So I was anchoring one of the evening newscasts and then anchoring a one-hour political talk show, which in the middle of a pandemic kind of turned into more so pandemic show, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, more pandemic, all that, all the time.
Pandemic and election season was basically what every day was. So that was interesting.
So you're in Tampa, you're learning about journalism. What's been the most difficult part of this business? Because I want to talk about, you know, you are a very attractive person, and we see a lot of attractive people in our business, and a lot of times people don't have a lot of empathy for attractive people. But I think, as we just learned over the past 30 minutes, I mean, you've been through some real shit. Let's talk about that first, then we'll talk about some things that have stuck with you about the media. So tell me this: how do you feel about being attractive? Has it helped you? Has it hurt you? And does it bother you that sometimes people do look at you and go, oh, because you are a person. I mean, I have to say myself, I'm guilty of it. Looking at you, it's like, wow, she seems happy-go-lucky, like she's got it all. She's gorgeous. So does it bother you when people think your life is great?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for the first year that I was in Tampa, I mean, that was much of the comments that I would get from people. It would be, you know, who's this perfect person? Or they didn't like me because they thought I was this, you know, ideal news anchor, I guess. But like, that was the thing that I am the farthest thing from that, in my opinion. And it really took me a while to get the people in Tampa to become accustomed to me, to like me. And once I did, I mean, I had a lot of people that were there that, you know, still keep in contact with me on social media, but it wasn't easy. I mean, I had to, at one point I cut my hair with an attempt to try to get people to take me more serious. And that's been the whole thing. A lot of times people don't take me very seriously because of the way I look or come off on TV. And, you know, I've spent a really good majority of my career trying to prove myself, if you will, to people that, you know, I'm more than just this talking head on TV that might look pretty on TV. And, you know, I try to show who I am and my personality and my soul and be gracious with people when they do, you know, maybe make some nasty comments. I try to say, look, you know, I'm a person too. And you saying that through a computer screen is hurtful. And if you think that that doesn't affect me, it does. So, you know, there were times where I've had people leave some really nasty comments. And when I was younger, I would internalize a lot of those and I would go home and cry and think, how can I be better? How can I convince this person that, you know, I'm not that? Or how can I prove this, that, or the other? Because I was so worried about what other people thought of me.
But yeah.
Then I came to the realization that I just need to be me, because if I'm me, then people are going to be off, you know, realize my authenticity. And at the end of the day, I'm not going to take the opinions of people who are going to sit there and leave hateful comments on social media and take that for face value.
And, you know, I think with time in our business, the more you go along, you realize that no matter what you do, not everyone's going to love you. It doesn't matter. I mean, you can be popular as an anchor, but there's still people that hate you, critique you for their own reasons. I thought this was interesting, though. You had said to me in this business that men have actually been more critical of you and, you know, more hurtful to your career than women, which is really interesting because I would have thought it would have been the opposite.
Right. Yeah. No, I've actually had more men who have said things to me like, you know, oh, let us handle this, or we've got this, and you know, we don't need your help, and things that I'm just like taken aback by. But it's been women that, like, I have such a good group of other news besties is what I call them, you know, a group of women that are just so inspirational, so intelligent in their own different ways. And they just all, you know, we all kind of lift each other up. And I think that that is so important, especially in a business like this, where it is so competitive. But at the end of the day, like, you being better makes me try harder, which then makes me better. And so that's how our mentality is. And I think a lot of people in today's day and age in the news business, especially women, you know, that's how we all are. Like, let's gather together and let's build each other up, because that's so important, especially in such a cutthroat, you know, industry.
And I always say to people, no matter what industry you're in, there's room for everyone. It might not unfold the exact way you want or the timing that you want, but like, if you love it and you're in it and you keep working at it, like, those breaks will happen no matter who you are, you know? But a lot of people come from the place of scarcity, you know, of there's only so many, you know, reporters or journalists or anchor, you know? So, okay, well, a lot of people probably don't know this, but you came to Fox 5 on a freelance gig, right? Not knowing that you would be full-time or not, right?
I know. This was such a chance. Oh, my goodness.
So how did you – what was it inside of you that knew to bet on yourself to take this opportunity?
Yeah. So, you know, I had been applying to different jobs throughout the pandemic, and not a good time to try to find a new job. But I knew that where I was, there was nothing left for me there. I had outgrown everything that I could learn from there. And so I was like, it's time for me to move on to something bigger and better and something more challenging, to you know, better myself at the end of the day and to push myself further. And so I was like, I've just got to find something. So, you know, I had been applying a bunch of different places. Not a lot of places were hiring. A lot of places had hiring freezes going on because of the pandemic. And my agent, who's great, he texted me randomly. I remember exactly where I was. I was out walking my dog, and he texted me and was like, what do you think about a freelance position at Fox 5 in DC? And, you know, this place had been on my radar for like years prior. I think I had sent, you know, our bosses, Kyle and Paul, I think at one point I had sent them emails in the past being like, hey, like, can you look at my reel? I don't know if they ever did. So who knows? but, you know, I like wanted to come here years ago. You know, this was like definitely on my radar. So then this freelance position opens up and my agent's like, are you interested? I'm like, absolutely. So he's like, okay, well, you know, here's when you have your interview set up, this, that, and the other. And, you know, within 2 weeks, I was on my way here and packed everything up in my SUV, and me, my dog, my boyfriend, and whatever we could fit in the SUV, because we were only going to be here originally for 4 months. Wow. And so we left everything in Florida and we were like, we've got to take this chance. If anything, at least it's going to challenge me and I'm going to learn whether I can run with the big dogs, if you will, or if I need to take a step back and I can't handle this. So that was kind of the position. And it was like, all right, here we go.
And now you're full time, right? You get you end up coming, you bet on yourself, and now you're a full time anchor reporter here at Fox 5.
Yes, it's been great. So, you know, they gave me this great opportunity to start anchoring the weekends, and I'm just beyond blessed. I mean, this is like one of the goals and one of the things that I've prayed for. And, you know, I for the longest time, you know, over the past year during the pandemic, I was like, what is meant for me? It took me a lot of time to realize, like, what is meant for me will find me, because I was so concerned, like, why can't I find, you know, this, or why isn't this place hiring, or why am I not good enough for this station? And it was like, what's meant for you will find you. And that is something that I like live by now. I'm just like, you know what, it's out of my hands. I don't even, you know, anything that's a problem these days, that's my mentality and my go-to.
Oh my God. It's so good when you get to that place. Cause ironically, kind of when you let go, amazing things happen, like your right. dream coming true. So, well, I guess, you know, one last question, and then we kind of end these with a lightning round of okay. you know, questions, but what are you just enjoying the success and where you are, or do you have a bigger picture goal, or both?
Definitely both. You know, bigger picture, I would love to be, you know, at a network level. I think really that's the goal of just about any reporter or anchor. And that's definitely something in the long run. But right now, again, like I said, like this is, I am living one of the goals and one of the dreams that I wanted for myself years and years ago. And, you know, to be here and to be present, that is something that I'm really trying to, you know, understand more, is being thankful for the moments that I have now and being present and enjoying these moments that I have and taking it all in, really. So it's been great. I'm really enjoying it here. 8 months in and everything's going great.
Unbelievable. I can tell you right now, the audience is going to be blown away by this episode. Okay, lightning round. Are you a dog person or a cat person?
Oh my goodness, 100% dog person. I am like a crazy dog lady. Like, I see a dog and I'm like, oh, let me pet it. I actually just got a puppy. So I've got an older dog who's 11, and then I have a puppy that I just got.
What kind of dog?
So my older dog is like a terrier mix. She's a rescue. And then my puppy is a mini Dachshund. So he is like 3 pounds. He fits right here in your hands. And
little
so
wiener dog.
Yes, a little wiener dog. So his full name is actually Sir Hoppington Kurzbeiner, which means short legs in German. Von Schnitzel. So his full name is Sir Hoppington Kurzbeiner Von Schnitzel.
And didn't you have some kind of other crazy name you wanted to name him after a Friends character?
Yeah.
And your boyfriend thought you were nuts?
Yes. I love Friends. Friends is like my favorite TV show. And I was like, if you are a Friends person, you'll get this reference. But if not, you'll probably think I'm crazy. So there's this episode where Ross and Rachel are about to have a baby. And Phoebe, their friend, of course, wants to help name the baby. And Phoebe's like, well, you know, her name's Phoebe. And she's like, well, if it's a girl, name it Phoebe. If it's a boy, name it Phoebo. And I thought that was hilarious. Like, I was like, Could you imagine running around after this little dog named Phoebo? Like, what a horrible, such an ugly name that I thought it was funny. That one got nixed real quick.
Okay. Do we think that you're getting engaged in the next year? And how big does the ring have to be?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh.
Because I kind of think yes. I say yes, and I think you're getting a fairly big ring.
We should take bets on this because this could be interesting.
Girl, I don't see you showing up with a small ring. After all you've been through, I would give my boyfriend the biggest. I'm like, I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. I've been through hell.
So here's the thing is, like, I have friends who are like, oh, like, you know, they go out and they plan or they go try on engagement rings. Like, that is the complete opposite of my boyfriend. Like, there's no going out. Like, he will just surprise me. Like, he wants me to have absolutely no clue. So I know friends of mine who are like, oh yeah, we went shopping for engagement rings today. I'm like, yeah, that's not ever happening. Like, it will be a full, like, blindsided moment for me if it does happen.
The anxiety. Okay. Oh my God. Favorite place that you've ever traveled?
Oh goodness. Oh man. That is a tough one. That is really tough. I will say probably right now I have an enormous, like, travel bucket list that I want to go to, but I would say Roatan, Honduras. We lived there when I was younger, but that's where I learned to scuba dive. And it is just a beautiful, I mean, it is just, it's so quaint and, you know, different from the rest of Honduras. But it is very beautiful, like, water's crystal clear, very small little town, but just so natural. Like, it's not too touristy, if that makes sense.
Final question. What is your favorite skincare product? Because your skin's flawless. And I do hear that you have, like, tons of products, which
That is my like hobby, I guess you could say, on the side. Not really. Like, I have actual hobbies, but I like have this weird obsession with skincare. I have like 20 different products. It's really bad, but I would say, like, definitely go to vitamin C, retinol, and sunscreen. A lot of people don't wear sunscreen. Wear your sunscreen, people, because it is so important.
Okay. Like, SPF what? What are you SPF on?
I do like SPF 50 or 70 is what I do.
Lord. Yeah. Okay.
And I put it on, like, all the time. I'm constantly putting sunscreen on.
And now we know we have crow's feet and Jacqueline Matter does not. Jacqueline, I mean, I think you said it all. That was so informative. Welcome to Fox 5, even though you've been here.
Thank you, Sarah. This was great.
Well, I adore you for being so open. And I know everybody, every Fox 5 fan will too. When can we watch you and where can we follow you?
Yeah, you can watch me weekends, Monday or weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And then Wednesday through Friday, I'm either out reporting or filling in anchoring. So Wednesday through Sunday is when you can catch me on Fox 5. And then Instagram, I am at Jacqueline_Matter. Twitter is at JMatterTV because my name doesn't fit in a whole Twitter handle. And then I do have Facebook as well, which is just simply Jacqueline Matter Fox 5 BC.
Oh my God, Jacqueline, thank you so much. This was so great.
Thank you, Sarah. This was great. I had a wonderful time.